With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Colleges prepare agriculture workers for a high-tech future. California has led the way in developing cutting-edge agricultural technologies, enabling farms to do more with fewer workers and make farm work safer and more efficient. But these advances are also creating a challenge. Johnny White of Pena Vineyard Management, which manages wine grapes in Napa Valley, says, quote, "We need more skilled employees to be able to run this technology." College systems and public and private agencies are collaborating to teach experienced farm workers new skills and support farm interns working with new technologies. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and we'll talk more about workforce development later in today's interview segment, but for right now, let's go ahead and jump into today's show headlines. Newhouse launches ESA Working Group. Washington Representative Dan Newhouse, the Congressional Western Caucus, and the House Committee on Natural Resources launched the Endangered Species Act Working Group. The new group will look into how the Endangered Species Act is being implemented by federal agencies, the practical impacts on the American people, and how litigation is driving ESA decision-making, as well as how the success is currently defined under the Act. The group intends to publish a series of policy recommendations that reform the ESA to benefit the American people and species conservation. Newhouse says, quote, "It's clear the ESA desperately needs reform, not just for the sake of our species, but for people who are negatively impacted because of its land use restrictions, impacts on property values, and costly permitting requirements." Hundreds of species are listed under the Act, but only 3% have been delisted. "Clearly something is not working," says Natural Resources Chair Bruce Westerman of Arkansas. NAFB contributed to that report. And now here's Brian German with more agriculture news.
Growers can apply now through September 1st for the Climate Smart Cotton Program. Senior scientist for the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol, Chad Brewer, details what the program consists of.
U.S. cotton growers can apply for the Climate Smart Cotton Program. It's a five-year initiative that's led by the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. The application process includes completing enrollment in the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol by September 1st, and then also uploading their cotton production by March 1st, 2024. Growers will receive technical assistance as well as financial support and other benefits that can enhance their operations, profitability, and their environmental stewardship. So on the financial assistance side, the program is laid out in three different levels. Level one, which includes enrollment in the protocol and uploading your bale production, that's $5 an acre to the producers up to a max of 706 acres.
California's plan to move away from certain pesticides and management approaches has several benchmarks as part of the process. Director of the California Department of Pesticide Regulation, Julie Henderson, described some of the plans for rolling out the Sustainable Pest Management Roadmap.
The big picture goals are set in 2050, but we have a number of nearer term goals that are laid out in the roadmap. There are some goals that are set at 2025, some goals at 2030 that will keep us targeted. But I think the very immediate next steps are for us at the department working together with CalEPA and CDFA to develop a plan for implementation that's informed by the outreach that we're engaged in, including the public comment that we received at the beginning of the year. And part of that will lay out the next steps in a bit more detail and also identify needs for funding.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, many people in farming already know the benefits of precision agriculture, but Kurt Blades, Senior Vice President of the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, says a new report by the association aims to help the public understand.
The environmental benefits of precision agriculture is one of those topics that those of us involved in precision agriculture, we kind of just know inherently. A tractor that drives in a straight line and maybe doesn't overlap as much when it's doing its planting or tilling is probably going to use less fuel. What we attempted to do within AEM was to quantify those numbers to put them in a way that really would show the true environmental benefits. So we communicate those to the environmental groups, those stakeholders that are maybe don't completely understand agriculture and may have a negative opinion. So we want to show that this technology is really making a big difference in both farms' economic benefits, but also when you add them together, the societal benefits.
He says there have been major advancements in recent years, especially when it comes to specialty crops.
Absolutely. The technology varies. Obviously, if you're harvesting strawberries versus harvesting, 10,000 acres of wheat, there are two different bits of technology, but the fundamentals are very much the same, and the benefits are very similar. It's amazing how much our world in agriculture has changed over the last 5 and 10 years because of, the rapid adoption of sensors and because of GPS technology, that things that we wouldn't have ever dreamed were possible, like harvesting strawberries mechanically and keeping them softly held and knowing when they're ripe. Those things were just, kind of pipe dreams just a few years ago, are very much reality today. You think about where this technology is going and what that means both to the farmer and to the environment. It's pretty amazing story.
Blades credits the advancements to simple need.
Never underestimate the power of innovation. I mean, the human spirit will see a problem and solve a problem. In the case of strawberries, I think we have some well-documented labor shortages in specialty crops areas that sort of necessitated that innovation. So I will never bet against human innovation. I think we will find a way.
Two acts up for inclusion in the Farm Bill would advance precision agriculture around the U.S., and both are supported by AEM, including the Precision Ag Loan Act and the Precise Act. Both would help farmers with funding for precision ag equipment.
Well, we obviously support many of the things that our friends in the ag industry support, such as a good strong safety net and increased demand. But specifically, AEM is behind two pieces of bipartisan legislation that are being talked about as part of the Farm Bill. One of those being the Precision Ag Loan Act, which is a mechanism that allows farmers to gain access to better financing to adopt precision ag technology, specifically because of the story we're having here of it being an environmental benefit story. So that is we're hoping for incorporation of that into the Farm Bill. The other piece that we're taking a look at is a bipartisan piece of legislation called the Precise Act, and that is using equip funds or allowing farmers to use equip funds to maybe upgrade their farm equipment to include precision agriculture because of the environmental benefits, much like they might be making some land improvements using those same equip funds. So those are two pieces that we're specifically looking for. Tell you what, it's a fun time to be in agriculture when you can talk about positive solutions. And this Farm Bill debate that's kind of underway and will be continuing for the next several months is certainly bringing these topics front and center.
You can read more about them on our website, agnetwest.com. That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's Livestock Report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, the United States is once again a top supplier of beef to Japan. At least that's according to USDA's Economic Research Service. U.S. market share collapsed in 2004 after a single case of bovine spongiform encephalopathy, otherwise known as mad cow disease, was detected in a cow shipped from Canada to the U.S. In response, Japan placed an embargo on the U.S. and Canadian beef products. Then in 2006, Japan began phasing out the ban on U.S. beef and fully lifted it then in May of 2019. Over this period, U.S. beef imports rebounded nearly to pre-ban levels, shipping 233,000 metric tons to Japan in 2021. The U.S. is now the second largest supplier of beef to Japan. That's behind Australia. Recently, ratified trade agreements between Japan and these partner countries are expected to contribute to changes in Japan's market for imported beef. Researchers estimate that by 2033, annual schedule reductions in Japan's import tariffs will increase imports of U.S. beef by 27%, or some $413.8 billion from 2018 levels. Well, organic dairy producers have just a few days left to apply for organic dairy marketing assistance from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program assists certified organic dairy producers facing unique challenges in recent years. That includes higher costs attributed to the pandemic and drought conditions across the country. USDA's Farm Service Agency provides financial assistance for a producer's projected marketing cost in 2023 based on 2022 cost. Now, the program provides a one-time cost share payment based on marketing cost on pounds of organic milk marketed in the 2022 calendar year. The financial assistance provides immediate support to certified organic dairy operations during this year, keeping organic dairy operations sustainable until the markets return to more normal conditions. Now, USDA will invest some $104 million in financial assistance to certified organic dairy producers. Organic dairy producers should apply, though, by July 26. In order to apply, just simply stop by your local USDA service center. And the American Sheep Industry Association welcomed last week's news that Representative Barry Moore of Alabama introduced a resolution in support of checkoff funds, funds that include the American Land Board. Moore said checkoff programs have made significant measurable strides in raising the level of demand and awareness for our farmers, ranchers, and forestry products. He said this resolution expresses congressional support for checkoffs due to the research, education, and promotion efforts they have provided to our producers. The resolution highlights each of the 22 authorized research and promotion boards, including the American Land Board. Now, the American sheep industry did vote twice in nationwide referendums to implement and continue the American Lamb Checkoff Program. To see more of this story, go to the American Sheep Industry Association website, sheepusa.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
And now, another episode of One Soil to Live.
All right, let's take a look, Claude. I see you've been keeping it covered.
Yes, I have.
And it appears you haven't disturbed it.
Well, I've tried really hard not to.
You're using living roots throughout the year with diverse species in rotations, right?
Just exactly as you prescribed, Doctor.
Well, I'll have to say I'm impressed with your organic matter, aggregation, and microbial activity. Claude, I'm happy to report that your soil is fit as a fiddle.
Oh, thank you. I guess it's true that soil health management systems are just what the doctor ordered.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Improving soil health can make your farm more productive, profitable, and resilient. Visit your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
You've been listening to the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
We spent a record amount on food last year. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows consumer spending on food reached a record in 2022. Real, or inflation-adjusted, annual food spending in the United States increased steadily from 1997 to 2022, except in 2008 and 2009 during the Great Recession, and in 2020 during the coronavirus pandemic. Total food spending increased 70% from 1997 to 2022. During this period, food at home spending increased at a slower rate, 53%, than food away from home at 89%. Total food spending increased on an annual basis of 7.2% in 2021 and 4.5% in 2022. Food away from home spending increases, 19% in 2021 and 8% in 2022, drove the overall increases in food spending. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
And high temperatures are hitting record levels. Several southwestern and western communities are reporting record or record-tying high temperatures. USDA's Rod Bain talks with USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey in this report.
Record high temperatures continue throughout the south and west. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey starts with,
our hottest deserts of the southwest, a temperature of 129 degrees last Sunday near Death Valley, California, just a few miles from the official observation site. And the official Death Valley observation recorded 128 degrees on Sunday, July 16th.
Meanwhile, in Kingman, Arizona,
we saw an all-time record high temperature, a community where weather records go back more than 100 years. The temperature there last Saturday, July 15th, hit 114 degrees. All-time record in Kingman had been 113 degrees set twice before.
While Reno, Nevada last Sunday reported a record-tying all-time high temperature of 108 degrees Fahrenheit. Rippey adds heat at record high temperatures is expected to continue through this week in several locales in the southern and western U.S. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen. An issue that keeps coming up in different parts of the country involves warrantless searches on farms and ranches. It's a big concern to rural landowners with significant constitutional implications. The government can't conduct unreasonable searches and seizures. If a person has a legitimate expectation of privacy, the government must get a warrant before conducting a search. But in 1924, the Supreme Court said that the Fourth Amendment protections don't extend to open fields, areas beyond those immediately surrounding and associated with the home. Over the past few years, the issue has seemed to come up more frequently in numerous cases in several states. Those cases point out that state law on the issue matters significantly. Also, some state legislatures have amended existing law in an attempt to provide greater protection to landowners. Those laws are often directed at state wildlife officials. If the government seeks entry into such an area, a reasonable reading of the Constitution requires the government to gather probable cause and secure a search warrant before entering. In addition, when a landowner posts property as no trespassing, that posting should be respected, even by the government. The warrantless search issue will likely continue in the future in the courts and state legislatures. It's an important issue for farmers, ranchers, and rural landowners. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McOwen.
The growth of sorghum in the global export market. It is part of the mission of the United Sorghum Checkoff Program. One of the grower-led checkoff programs with USDA oversight, emphasizing research and marketing of their specific commodity.
The world over the past several years has discovered sorghum, and certainly our work at the producer-funded sorghum checkoff focuses heavily on expanding markets, particularly higher value markets that bring premiums for producers.
And Norma Rich Johnson of United Sorghum says this comes about via value added, as well as partnership.
On the global front, we partner very closely with the U.S. Grains Council. Certainly, they have great relationships all over the world. We have maintained and been able to establish some really good relationships all over the world. And it's just really a matter of being able to grow enough sorghum to fill those needs around the world, as well as to meet the ever-expanding end uses for sorghum here domestically.
What does that value added look like for both the sorghum industry and consumers? One example provided by Rich Johnson.
Increasing a bit every single year in terms of what percent of the sorghum crop goes into pet food. We at the Sorghum Checkoff used to do a pretty good job of keeping up with the pet foods that included sorghum, so we could brag about them and even list those on our website for consumers to look at. And we're having a really good problem right now in terms of not being able to keep up with what's out there in terms of the pet food industry that includes sorghum.
Sorghum is considered a novel or ancient grain ingredient, according to Rich Johnson, which drives consumer interest.
And it is absolutely a market for sorghum that brings premium for producers.
The value-added priority has long been part of United Sorghum's mission area since its formation in 2008 as a checkoff program.
Some of that is breeding marketable traits, such as high protein, looking at characteristics and traits such as leucine. So anything that we can do where we're conducting research to meet the demands that are out there in terms of what the world is looking for in sorghum, that's something that we're investing in as well.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do we have GMOs? Actually, we've been modifying crops for thousands of years to prevent crop loss from pest and weather damage, to grow more food on less land, even to improve nutrition. Today, GMOs are developed for the same reasons. With genetic engineering, scientists can change and improve crops more easily and quickly. Feed your mind with more GMO facts on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
The Dow notched its ninth straight higher close yesterday and set a new 52-week high. I'm Mark Oppold with your bottom line report to end the week, brought to you by Helena Agri. Indeed, the ninth straight higher close yesterday. This is the longest stretch of consecutive higher closes in nearly 4 years. Banks and financial-related companies, the real reason why, meeting or beating quarterly earnings as the earnings season continue. Banks showing more stabilized deposits after we know a very shaky start to the year. The next target up would be 36,585. That target was set January 3rd of last year. Again, watch that number, 36,585. Most major agricultural companies release their quarterly earnings over the next 2 weeks, although AGCO Corporation and A.O. Smith are scheduled to report next Thursday. This is the Bottom Line Report. Helena says the journey to better plant health and better yield potential starts with broad-spectrum disease management from products like Odyssey. Visit HelenaAgra.com to learn more. We would look for more profit-taking here in the grain trade today, especially in the wheat complex. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day and a profitable week ahead.
I've noticed a number of radio stations and TV channels are doing Christmas in July programming, so I decided to try Thanksgiving in July, taking a look at that July favorite, turkey. And according to the latest Agriculture Department forecast, it looks like supplies of this festive fowl will be larger than expected both this year and next. The USDA's Outlook Board chairman is Mark Jekinowski. He says turkey producers are boosting production this year. They will likely do it again next year.
With these higher supplies, prices have actually been trending a bit lower.
In fact, USDA just lopped more than 4 cents off of its 2023 wholesale price forecast, now at almost $1.64 a pound. And for 2024, prices could average a little bit less than that, making it easier for grocery stores to run specials on turkey for the holidays. And Mary, oh, what am I saying? This is Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
In Farm and Ranch headlines from AgNet West, an equipment association is working to promote precision agriculture. More after this. Many people in farming already know the benefits of precision agriculture, but Kurt Blades, Senior Vice President of the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, says a new report by the association aims to help the public understand.
What we attempted to do within AEM was to quantify those numbers, to put them in a, you know, in a way that really would show the true environmental benefits. So we communicate those to, you know, the environmental groups, those stakeholders that are maybe don't completely understand agriculture and may have a negative opinion. So we want to show that this technology is really making a big difference in both farms' economic benefits but also when you add them together, the societal benefits.
Two acts up for inclusion in the Farm Bill would advance precision agriculture around the U.S., and both are supported by AEM. You can read more about them on our website, agnetwest.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson for Agnet West.
The Agriculture Department now has a new deputy secretary this week. That after weeks of the formal process that included the nomination by President Joe Biden, the Senate Agriculture Committee confirmation hearing.
My own roots are both rural and urban, agricultural and international development, blue collar and white collar. And what I love about this department is that it brings all of those things together.
Of then Agriculture Undersecretary of Rural Development, Social Torres Small. The vote of confirmation by the full Senate.
On this vote, the yeas are 79, the nays are 8. The motion is agreed to.
And not one, but two swearing-in ceremonies. The first, the official event, as did the ceremonial swear-in days later, featured comments by Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack about the new number two official at USDA.
When I think of Socia, I think of two things. One is she extraordinarily curious. If she has said to me once, she said to me a multitude of times. She's anxious to learn. She tells me that she is truly interested in learning and interested in providing the benefit of that learning for the benefit of all the people we serve at the USDA. Secondly, I think the thing that is greatest about her is she has a level of enthusiasm that's unmatched by anyone in this department. She's happy every day, at least that's the way it appears. And she has traveled all across the country with a very enthusiastic and inspirational message for the work we do at USDA.
Once the oath of office was administered,
I, Xochitl Torres Small, do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
And allegiance to the same.
That I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation.
Without any mental reservation.
Or purpose of evasion.
Or purpose of evasion.
And that I will well.
And that I will well.
And faithfully.
And faithfully.
Discharge the duties.
Discharge the duties.
Of the office.
Of the office.
Upon which I'm about to.
Upon which I'm about to enter.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Deputy, welcome.
The new deputy secretary explained the importance of her new mission from the context of her Latter-day Saint faith, which was instilled upon by her mother.
She was always a little sad that I didn't serve a mission. It's a big thing. It's a fundamental piece of the Mormon faith. When I told her that rural development isn't an agency, it's a mission area. And she was so proud because she knows the mission that we all do every single day, the faith that we have, that this is impossible work without each other, and the peace that we have because we know we are doing important work.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the Agnet News Hour by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Agnet News Hour or Agnet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Agnet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do you listen?
I just want to stay informed while I'm on the go.
News on the radio, it's nice because it's just a quick snippet and I don't have to go searching for it or grab a paper.
I listen to radio because anywhere that I'm going, I'm listening to music or I'm listening to a talk show or I'm just trying to stay up on current events.
I always turn into the radio to see if I need to take shelter, where it's hitting, to see what I need to be preparing for.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
Today we have with us Anna Genasi from Stanislaus County Farm Bureau talking again about different topics within the agriculture industry and how they affect the way that we do our day-to-day operations and live our lives. Anna, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I'm going to have you introduce our guest for the morning.
Thanks, Danielle, for having us again. And on behalf of the Farm Bureau, we appreciate a little bit of FaceTime with your listeners. Mm-hmm. Sitting with me this morning is Tim Roos. Now, Tim, as I mentioned on the pre-show, wears lots of hats. First and foremost, he and his beautiful wife operate Roos Tree Nursery in Oakdale. and he is a Stanislaus County Farm Bureau board member. And relevant to today's topic, he is a committee member for Stanislaus County Workforce Development.
Great. Well, thank you both for being with me today. Tim, I know that Anna just gave you a wonderful introduction, but now I sort of want to know a bit more about your background and how you got into the industry. Are you second, third generation? Are you a beginning farmer? And how you've been able to work yourself into some of these leadership roles?
Interesting question. I'm third generation. I grew up in Ripon in San Joaquin County. Mm-hmm. My father farmed, and as well as my grandpa farmed almonds and their almonds.
Uh-huh.
And my dad planted trees as well. You know, when you drive past the fields and grapes is easier to kind of understand, and you see the patterns. They're so straight in a line. Yes. You can almost see the patterns in between. My father did that with almond trees. He took great pride in having the trees being exactly straight. And so he did that as a living. So I learned out how to prepare ground, watching others do it from a very young age. I understood about soils. So even understanding from a colloquial standpoint of which part of the county is sandy versus clay. Mm-hmm. I knew how to plant trees, and I really have been involved in the almond and walnut industry from planting the tree to growing it to harvesting it all the way through the whole process. In the last 20 years, I've been in the nursery business and I kind of went and worked for a smaller nursery and then a bigger nursery. And then Susie and I, 5 years ago, decided to strike out on our own and basically control our own destiny in that regard.
Very nice.
And control quality.
Very nice. And so, you know, you've been in the ag industry as a farmer and now somebody who owns their own business with the nursery. How did you get involved with some of these community aspects of maybe serving with Farm Bureau and then on this Workforce Development Program Committee?
Well, about 3 or 4 years ago, it's been enough time that I can't remember, I was approached by Chris Helton, who was on the Workforce Development Committee board. And right before asking me and my participation of this group, Workforce Development, let me explain a little bit about Workforce Development. It's the department in the county that uses federal funding and tax dollars, and they partner with local businesses to try to upscale workers.
Okay.
And to try to create traction, I guess, as far as the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Each county has this same workforce development department. Right before I was asked to be on the committee, they had identified 5 sectors within our county to focus the taxpayer money to try to stimulate those industries and work with businesses in those industries. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I saw the potential. Is essentially you have a governmental agency with a bunch of money, and I don't know if it was foresight or just dumb luck, but by thinking that that we could do some good in the ag sector. And I think that we've made great strides in that way, in as far as getting that done. And the Farm Bureau and Anna have been an essential part of that program. Mm. So much so that Stanislaus County has been kind of a shining star within the workforce development world, and is really an example for other counties in our state, and has even been promoted nationally as far as the things that we've been able to do. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later, and Anna can kind of expand on that as well.
Absolutely. You mentioned, you talked just briefly about workforce development. Before we get into or developing the workforce, I'd kind of like to start off by just talking about agriculture labor in general and how it's presenting some challenges to the industry. So if you could, in your opinion, and Anna, you can chime in on this too, what do you guys think is like the current status of the workforce right now? I know it's challenging finding reliable labor, does it look promising with maybe this Workforce Modernization Act being proposed again, and maybe changing up some of these H-2A requirements? But just in your guys' opinion, give me an overall rundown of the current status of this agricultural workforce.
Great question, Danielle. So what I'm hearing, you know, Farm Bureau is a membership organization, and so we spend a lot of time obviously chatting with our members, and I'm kind of hearing like both sides of the spectrum. I've got members, you know, farmers, ranchers, and dairymen who have a great set of employees, a team that's been with them for decades, in some cases generationally, right? Like mom and dad works here and now their kiddos are coming to work, you know, during the summers while they're going to school. So that we have that on one end. And then on the other end, I hear the complaint of, I can't get anybody to come to work, or I set up an interview and no one, they don't even show up, or they come for 3 days and then never show up again. So we kind of get it across the board. If it's really interesting now that we've gotten involved in this workforce development thing and working with our liaison, his name is Chris, with the county, he talks about this is not an ag specific challenge. So across industry, folks are kind of seeing this attitude, for lack of a better word, of I want to work when I want to work, how I want to work. And if the employer's not willing to meet my goals, then I'm not going to work for them. So it's really interesting dynamic. And obviously, in terms of ag and our industry and our timely needs, right, harvest and things like that, that poses some big problems if we think that folks are coming to work today and then they don't. But you mentioned H-2A. I, you know, personally believe reform to that program is necessary, in particular for California. The types of crops that we have and the diversity of crops that we have really makes the H-2A program challenging for us because it is temporary in nature. You know, how do you hire a milker under that program? You don't, right? So that it's really not set up for California commodities. And I would love to see a program that added some leniency for the types of crops that we have here.
You're listening to AgNet NewsHour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leo. We'll be right back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines, such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. There are some new actions to increase competition in the food and agriculture sector. President Biden has announced these new initiatives to boost competition and discourage consolidation in the food and ag sectors. USDA's Gary Crawford has the report.
At the White House Wednesday,
capitalism without competition isn't capitalism, it's exploitation.
And with those words, President Biden announced a number of executive actions designed
to increase competition and lower costs for American households.
And in the food and agriculture arena, the president said the Agriculture Department,
together with bipartisan attorneys general in 31 states and the District of Columbia, are ramping up enforcement of antitrust and consumer protection laws in food and in agriculture.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said the overall goal of that effort very plain.
Crackdown on anti-competitive and anti-consumer practices that raise prices at the grocery store and deprive farmers of a fair return.
Vilsack said USDA is also continuing its efforts to promote construction of new meat processing facilities and fertilizer production plants, and also to create more and better local and regional markets for farmers to sell to.
Vilsack goes on to say that farmers are caught in a tight, consolidating squeeze.
Farmers and ranchers have been squeezed by corporate concentration and input industries like seeds, fertilizers, and even farm equipment on the one side, and on the other side by consolidation in the channels for selling agricultural products like meat and poultry processors and grocery retail markets.
Vilsack went on to outline several actions of the competition front.
We're also working swiftly to finish a suite of robust new rules under the Packers and Stockyards Act that will protect independent farmers and ranchers from abuse by the dominant meat and poultry processors. And we're also committed to finishing our work ensuring that when you see product of the USA on a food product, consumers will know that everything done to raise and process that product was done here at home. And finally, we've established a Farmer Seed Liaison Initiative, which will provide farmers a voice and greater transparency in seed patents to help provide choice and lower costs for producers.
The Organic Fertilizer Association of California is hosting a Sustainable Pest Management and Production Seminar next month in Tulare. The seminar will begin at 8 a.m. on Thursday, August 10th at the International Agri Center in Tulare. Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor David Havlin will begin the seminar with a presentation on understanding mating disruption and its contribution to IPM programs. That will be followed up by several product and label updates, as well as a discussion on virus diseases of vegetable crops and management options in the Central Valley. Cooperative Extension Farm Advisor Sandeepa Gautam will also be going over integrated pest management in citrus. After lunch, Judy Brandt from the Tulare County Ag Commissioner's Office will provide information on laws and regulations regarding pest control advisors and PCA recommendations. More information about the seminar is available on the upcoming events page at agnetwest.com. I'm Brian German for Agnet West Radio Network.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at Agnet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the Agnet News Hour from Agnet West. Agnet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.